Welcome to Esoteric Modulation, episode 021, Red Stripe Down.
Esoteric Modulation is your podcast that covers all the wild and wonderful world of modular, exciting and unusual instruments, guest interviews, sound snippets, and we also take a look into the interesting sound and visual art projects too. I've crowbarred my way in, and I'm Ben Wilson. How's it going, Ed?
How did you do that? Damn, that was quick. Whipping the mic off me like that, mid-sentence.
I really liked having a go last time.
Well, on the plus side, again, everyone gets to hear your lovely Bradfordian tones wafting through the airways before the brash old Brummy jumps in. Anyway, Ben, what you been up to? I see that you've been back live streaming again.
Yeah, live streaming with Chris Meyer for the TARDIS live stream series, which is a follow-on from the Feeding the Monster series and Patching the Monster, which is the Monster Studio case. Named as such, not because he likes to say, oh, this sounds a beast and all these kind of over-the-top descriptions, but it was the ADAC or ADAC Systems Monster Frame. The new series and his Eurorack live setup is the TARDIS, as a band member kind of joke that it's like a TARDIS in that it's bigger on the inside than the out. Opens this nice hardwood 12U Eurorack case full of wires, about 50 modules.
Wow.
There's a lot going on and really nicely put together. So Chris sharing his knowledge and kind of wisdom on these things and experience with us. And also had Peter Blasser of Seat Lombard on the single malt synthesis streams too.
I enjoyed that, mate. That was a great show just to listen to him and, you know, sort of talk about the instruments. That brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah. He had a Jaeger because didn't have any whiskey to hand. It's quite a surprise. I've not seen Jaegermeister for a long time. And jammed on packing tape, sellotape.
That made me laugh.
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to, what was the instrument that he did play at the end that he said he was going to, because he said he was going to play on the instrument, didn't he? And you all got going, and all of a sudden, all you could hear was this sellotape.
Yeah, he's holding up the Tecantes.
That's it.
Yeah, then all of a sudden it's which was, great. Something I'd like to share. I had a little idea, an arpeggio whirling round my mind, as one does. Little musical phrases kind of wandering around the head. Just letting sounds wander and arpeggios build against each other, against some kind of chopped up breaks with lots of chance and random probability-based processing going on. So I'd like to play a bit of that before we get into the show.
Yeah, that's lovely, that is, Ben. It's sort of like lovely movement of sound, very plucky, you know. It's and I love when the drums come in as well. I know it's all about the arpeggiation, but I love those sort of heavy, distorted, trip-hoppy drums as well when those come in.
Yeah, I love a good drum break. Really nice. Well, it's maybe a bit egotistical to say really nice. It will be, I'm hoping, the kind of vision I have for the piece. The reason I wanted to share it, well, it's nice to talk about what we're doing, of course, but it's so that people can, in 6 months' time, go, Ben, are you going to put that track out?
Yeah, it holds you to account, doesn't it?
Yeah, if no one else, at least you can then account, you can kind of push on me for that a little bit.
Yeah,
it needs a bass line. It may be some kind of washy chordal thing in the background. Tape delay would be nice, of course. But yeah, that's kind of the most recent thing, just trying to get that out of my head. And I'm glad it's there in a folder that I hope I go back to. I can't promise I will.
Yeah.
We'll see. But if people like it, maybe leave a comment somewhere. Encourage me to get that one finished, maybe.
Yeah. Hurry up. Come on, let's get it done.
But what about you? You've been playing around with some of the gear recently too.
Yeah, so I was talking earlier, wasn't we, that one of my favourite things to do is just get the continuum out and just put a big long loop on and just keep looping and looping. It's sort of like just a therapeutic thing for me. Same as like I love playing piano as well. Not that I'm a great keys player, but I just love playing piano as well. I find that very therapeutic. So I thought instead of just looping these things and never recording them, I'd do a similar thing, but actually put each loop in the door and start choreographing snippets so I can use them in the future. So it's very simple, really. I got the Continuum Mini out, a nice simple setup with, again, the Eventide space. And what I wanted to do, especially for this show, is just that, you know, I'm always saying how good the Continuum is, and people always know the Continuum is grateful if you want these sort of expressive violins and flutes and all those type of sort of modal sounds as well. But for me, I love it for sound design, and I don't think it gets called out enough for sound design. So I just really wanted to work on the sound design presets and do something sort of dark and dystopian, sort of soundscapey in nature. And so what I did is kept myself to the presets and slightly adjusted the presets on the sound design side of things. And then what I do is each preset I run through the space, and I just literally go through space and find a preset that matches that sound. I love doing that, matching a sound with the preset. And then I just kept building up layers into what I call a track called Bacteria, which is named after actually the first sound design preset on the Continuum. Shall we have a little listen to that?
Yeah, let's have a listen. It's great. It's really kind of evocative and dark. There's a nice, I guess, a moan to one of the sounds, kind of a...
Yeah.
Kind of painfully tails off.
Yeah, it does. It's almost, I'm in pain.
Yeah, there's a sound that's feeling sorry for itself in there. Yeah. But I really like those. It's the pitch bend that does it. On the game Crisis in the soundtrack, I remember one of the like chord tones goes... like pushes back and forth. It's got this like human like whine to it. Good. Quite like evocative in a way. It's great, and that works really well in this. It's nice to hear that's all Continuum, or the Continuum Mini, but it's all the same sound engine, right?
Yeah, it's all the same sound engine. It's just on the Mini as well, so I'm not really using anything, you know, any polyphony in it. I mean, it's duophonic, but I'm sort of using single expressions really. And this is what I use the Continuum for all the time. I get lost in these things, but I think it's nice to, and I don't see this out, I mean, I should do a video about it actually, because I don't see it out in the wild very much when people are doing videos about continuums, just how good they are at sound design, soundscapes. They've got some lovely, unusual sounds in there. And when you start layering them up and, you know, putting a little bit of shine from something like the space on them as well, it just makes a great amalgamation of soundscape sounds. Obviously, the expression part of the continuum's brilliant when you have got like a woodwind or something like that on there. But when you've got these weird sounds, and like you say, you're bending them and you're sort of rolling them around and you're actually building the expression into them, then it gives them something quite haunting and enchanting, I think. Just, again, I love the continuum. I mean, you know, the mini's good. The big continuum's just fantastic, you know.
Well, it says a lot because it's not that wet. There's clearly reverb and you can hear the eventide space, but it's not drenched. Yeah. It's not leaning in way too heavily, as some of us do, into the effects to create the bed of sound. So it's the fact it's one synth or one instrument, and I imagine not that high dry wet levels on a nice reverb and a few layers built up. It works really well.
Yeah, great instrument for it. I love it. As I say, it's like, it's my doodling of the music world that then it struck me, I'm not taping any of this. So I thought, okay, well, when I start doing that now, I'm going to start putting it down and sort of building up a bank of sound snippets and sounds, little soundscapes that I can use in bigger pieces, if you like.
It's all material you can use later. If you put an album out and you end up with loads of this as B-sides or samples or loops, be great to throw it into a morphogene or something like that, building material and assets for your own projects for you to use in your own artistic practice, but also it's kind of sample fodder for other people. So even if it's just these small little layers, I think it's really important we all try and document more of what we're doing and then share it. It becomes a real thing once it's out with other people.
Yeah,
I'd certainly love to hear more of it.
Yeah, well, I think what I'm going to try and do for next time is take some sound snippets like this and then start extra processing it. So I'm going to start putting it through the Micro Granny and cassette and rebringing that in. I was thinking of then doing a sort of a dry wet mix, as in, you know, keep some of the original slightly behind it and then superimpose over the top of that the sort of cassette and granular stuff over the top of that and see what that sounds like. So I might try and get that together for the next show.
Yeah, I love that. I've been thinking with the Lyra 8 EP that I mentioned to a few people that I'm quite happy with in its raw state, but I want to get it out onto tape and half speed it and pull some more layers back into DAW and play around and just kind of put this collage of sound together how I want. I want a little bit to play with first. I may end up heavily leaning on the just dry recorded performance. But you mentioning doing it kind of dry against wet on the tape, I may just run some modular effects onto tape and half speed the effects and keep the Lyra dry.
Nice.
For that kind of separation of, there's a lot of effects, but they're all shifted down in this kind of tape grunge. It's certainly fun to play around with.
Yeah, that sounds really nice.
Well, enough about our audible wanderings. Who have we got on the show today, Ed?
We have got a great guest on the show today. As a child, he studied classic and jazz music at Berklee School for Music. After playing the bass guitar for a while, he discovered the wonders and freedom of electronic music. We all know the rocky road. Synths and analog equipment started appearing. Then, as night follows day, you guessed it, the modular addiction showed up hard. There was no escaping the Euro crack, and he fell truly down the rabbit hole of patch cables and modules. He is well known for his symbiotic modular integration with hardware like the Digitact, and for coaxing well-produced music out of those hybrid systems. He has a wealth of gear and system knowledge, as not only is he an artist and performer, but he also worked at Nerd Audio and Chicago Musical Exchange too. Dangerous places to work when you've got money in your pocket and you've got a bad habit. He's now moved on to pastures new, focusing more on his own creativity and new ventures in education of all things equipment and music, something that he has a natural passion for. It's great to have him on the show today to see what he's actually up to. His name is Corey Sterling. Corey, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
So we've got lots of questions to get through today for you. I think my first one I'd like to start off with is, could you give us a bit of background to your road to where you are now?
Yeah, sure. I started pursuing music when I was very young, probably 11 or 12. Joined a cover punk rock band with my middle school prepubescent friends, and I was the odd man out, so I ended up playing bass because nobody else wanted to play bass, which I later in life am very thankful for, because the choice of instrument kind of led me here. I studied all through middle school, high school, college. I went to school for music at Berklee, studying classical and jazz mostly, And after my collegiate musical experience, I was pretty burnt out on music, and it was really just kind of due to the academia of it. And I slowly started to discover electronic music, and I realized that, holy cow, this is almost the exact opposite of what I had been learning in school. And I kind of fell in love with the freedom that electronic music gave me, and that ended up in a rabbit hole of synthesizers, analog gear, eventually forming into modular, eventually kind of branching out. And it kind of all comes from being in the bassist role and always supporting somebody else's idea and somebody else's vision. With electronic music and all of this gear, these synthesizers, I can be the master creator, and I can dictate where things go, and it can be a one-man operation with endless possibilities. And there's something very alluring about that to me.
Did you find yourself chasing that on bass, you know, getting into, you know, higher up the neck? There's some nice chord inversions for bass players as well. You know, not that common to play chords on a bass, but it's certainly possible. And pedals and things like that. Were you chasing that, chasing more than just the root note?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Soloing, melodic practice, improvisation in a melodic realm was always my favorite thing to do, even though I was the bass player. So I had a duty to hold down the groove, but I also felt a need to pursue melody and additional harmonic things. So yes, I started studying chord structure on the bass. I have a 6-string bass. I actually took a 5- and 6-string bass chord lab at Berkeley, which was a lot of fun, a very challenging class, but very cool. It kind of brings bass players into that world where we start having to think about harmony in different ways. And I realized that I just was never going to get what I wanted out of music by simply playing the bass. And not that it's a simple instrument or I'm, you know, it's any less of a pursuit than any other instrument, but there was just something about the role and where it stood in contemporary music that just wasn't going to allow me to express myself in the way that I wanted to musically. And luckily with electronics, I can have both worlds. I can have that strong groove, that heavy bass, but, you know, dip into ethereal territories, ambient stuff. It's just an open book, and there's no rules. Nobody's standing over me telling me, hey, you're not playing that correctly, or, oh, it actually goes like this. It's completely up to me and my interpretation, and therefore, I think, probably a better artistic outlet for me than a conventional instrument.
Really, it's funny, isn't it? And maybe some of us remember it, and some listeners do, and maybe some don't. But the first time you hear like a 909 through a club system, and you realize what it's doing to you and what it's doing to everyone else in there, and it's just a beat. You know, the intros and outros of tracks that still somehow move you before any other musical elements have come in.
Sure.
What was your first instrument? So electronic music started to have this pull. You started to kind of realize it, find that world, get into that music. What was the first thing you bought? A drum machine, keyboard, sampler, software?
Yeah. Actually, the first synthesizer I bought was a Virus C.
Ooh, nice.
Which was a great instrument, but way beyond my understanding. Mm. I had a friend who was getting into electronic production, and he was using a Virus TI. I couldn't afford the TI-2, so I went for a used model, and I bought the C module, which I really regret selling now because I would love to have that, and I'm sure I can find one again. Not a problem. But yeah, that was the first synth I bought, and I just didn't understand it. And I didn't have the patience at that point in my life to really sit down and dig into it. I was really more concerned about an immediate satisfaction, getting something that sounded good. Yeah, I'm cool because I have a hardware synth. But as far as sound design and starting, you know, from a base and building something custom for myself, I had no idea how to do that. It wasn't until modular, honestly, that I started to understand what synths did.
Yeah.
And so I went through a lot of great instruments and thought they weren't for me because, honestly, I didn't understand them and I didn't take the time to learn them. So modular was the eye-opener for me. And looking back, like, holy cow, I had these great pieces at my disposal. I wish I would have had the patience, you know, 12 years ago to put into them.
It's funny how modular does that. It forces you to learn. Well, maybe it doesn't for everyone, but it kind of forces you to learn signal flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
If somehow you care about what you're doing, because you will bump into things like, why is this filter always overdriving? my sounds? Why is it always fizzy? Why is it loud? Why is the output of that one too quiet? Why doesn't this envelope seem to open that one as much as that one does?
Sure.
And you either just get frustrated and get rid of it, or you embrace it and learn it. And I think every other thing I use, hardware, software, is far better, or I'm far better, comfier, more technically proficient just from using modular.
Absolutely.
I kind of owe it so much.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just sat at a laptop, which I do enjoy just sitting and composing and realizing ideas on a laptop sometimes. It's a strange kind of busman's holiday away from the hardware, but it's definitely influenced.
Yeah.
From modular still.
Yeah, I mean, you're learning each piece from the ground up. What each circuit does, each component of the instrument, why it's there, what you can get out of it. I mean, it really forces you to explore each component of the instrument, you know, one at a time. If the first synthesizer you ever bought was a Moog 1, you would sit there and look at that like, holy shit, what am I doing? And it shouldn't be the first synthesizer you buy. I would never recommend that. But yeah, you sit at something like that, it's daunting, it's crazy. But after you start breaking down the individual components, you can take a broader look at a more complex instrument like that and kind of compartmentalize each section and how the signal is moving. And this is what I used to tell all of my customers all the time. All of these synths are pretty much working in the exact same way. There's some variance in the sound and how they work and the response given different parameters or whatever. But once you understand really how one instrument works, you can apply a lot of that to other instruments down the line, and you should be able to get something out of it.
So why modular? Was there an artist you saw with it? Did you bump into it somewhere physically? You saw some in a store or a friend? Or?
Well, I mean, I did notice that some of the artists at the time that I was listening to a lot, Trent Reznor, and actually Deadmau5 was the first electronic music show that I ever went to. And I kind of, like you mentioned before, hearing just that 909 or that 808 hit a big system and watching how that affects people. The first house show I ever went to was a Deadmau5 show in New York. And I just remember standing there and watching all of these people lose their minds over something that was so simple. And I thought, holy cow, like this is the connection that I've always wanted with an audience, right? This is amazing. So yeah, I saw artists that I was listening to a lot at the time using gear like that. And I thought, that's really interesting. And I happened to live in New York City, in Brooklyn specifically, right down the street from Control, which is just a legendary modular shop now. And I would walk by all the time, having some basis in electronic music, but really wanting to go further and being too intimidated to go in. I was afraid I wasn't going to know what was going on and look like an idiot. And I think this is a very common thing when it comes to modular. People are kind of afraid to get into it. It does seem intimidating from the outside. I completely understand. But one day I went in, spent a few hours in there, and those guys were so nice. They showed me around the whole system. We talked about all the different components, and I decided right then and there, like, I'm going to save up for this. This is something really interesting and really unique. This must have been about 8 years ago, maybe a little later. And at that time, nobody I knew was using modular gear. So it seemed like something different and unique that I could jump into and separate myself from some of the other electronic artists and really just something to have fun with. It started as just an interest and like, hey, I'm going to invest some money. I want to learn about this. I have no intention on taking this any further than my bedroom. And then here we are, you know, 7-8 years later, and it's definitely gone a lot further, and I just can't believe how it's snowballed, and the interest in modular in general has just gone through the roof worldwide over the last 5 years. It's been nuts.
Yeah, I mean, who would have believed where we are at the moment with modular and how popular it's got? It has been on an amazing trajectory, hasn't it?
It's been incredible.
I was really interested when I watched some of your videos on your YouTube channel, and I think it was 2018 that I seen sort of a lovely shot from your apartment window, your modular setup there. And you had, I think it was the Digitact at that time, sort of, you know, running into your modular. And we sort of look at you and I think we get a feeling that you build your modular up as an instrument and you try and integrate these other instruments into your modular workflow. Can you run us through how that evolved, your mindset on that, and how you feel that you know, helps and enhances the modular to integrate this other equipment into it.
Yeah, absolutely. When I first got into modular, I thought it was modular or bust. I started investing in everything I could in modular, drums, sequencers, just I wanted everything to be modular. I wanted to have as much control over every aspect of my sound as possible. And as I went through that process, I kept coming across the same frustrations and not being able to create long form things as easily, or having to dedicate an entire patch to essentially one idea. So I started to look for other outlets that would allow me to connect with my modular, integrate that and interact with it at the same time, but also give me something to fall back on, like a parachute of sorts, another instrument, a sequencer, a sampler, whether that was an analog 4 or a Digitact or some other type of outboard hardware, something that I could rely on, but also integrate into my modular to create longer ideas. And I think the Electron stuff just right out of the gate is a no-brainer if you're a sequencer junkie, a sampler junkie, or a synth junkie. The Electron stuff has such a unique and interesting workflow, and especially with any type of CV connection between the two, you can really get a lot of compositional tools out of a box that integrates perfectly with your modular system.
What would you say is some of the better equipment that you do like? For you, is it the Digitact's the one? You just love that thing and the integration of it?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten so used to working with the Electron sequencer. I couldn't imagine doing what I do without it. In combination with the Poly and Poly module, I'm able to connect 8 tracks of my Digitech directly into my modular system and get 8 separate clocked LFOs if I want to, pitch and gate sequencing or whatever else I want to send through a CC message, and just the pairing of the two. I mean, I could potentially do a long form gig with a Digitech in a 6U case and just have everything being sequenced through the Digitech. It's so small, it's easy, and you know, considerably cheaper than some of the other Electron options, if you don't count the new model series, which look fantastic. I think if people are interested in Electron and they don't want to drop the $800 or the, you know, $1,500 they might be looking at on an Analog Rhythm or an Octatrack, those model instruments are a great way to get the sequencing flow under your fingertips and understand what's going on inside Electron and see if you want to move up at $200, $300. I mean, holy cow. You can't really beat that.
You're either drawn to that Electron workflow or you're a bit repulsed by it.
It can be a lot. So I can understand some people really loving it, some people hating it, some people being on the fence. I say to those people who own it already but are thinking of selling it, put a little more time in. You can always sell it. The market is strong.
We can always put more time in. And, for me, that's been many times I've sat behind a drum kit or I picked up a guitar or a bass. And it's been a while. And you're like, oh, God, my hands feel just like trash. But it's the same thing. It's not as physical as maybe playing a bass or a guitar, but it's exactly the same thing. And I know many people that have tried mods and gone, I have to patch the oscillator into the filter. Like, all my other sims just do it. And it's like, it's maybe not right for you. And it's cumbersome. Like, to just patch like a monosynth, just get a monosynth. Not to say that a monosynth in modular couldn't be more than that and a stepping stone to other things, but if you know that particular project just warrants one oscillator into one filter into one VCA, maybe don't use modular for that.
There's plenty of other great options at a much lower cost if you want just a one voice mono. Like you said, I think that's the building block to something larger, right? We start with one voice and then we start adding and it becomes something else. But if you're looking for a monosynth, just get a cheap used Moog, man.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? And I think, again, that's the conclusion I've come to. Just have all the yummy, unusual stuff that you just can't get anywhere else. If buying a monosynth is going to be, you know, probably about a third of a price of building one in modular, you're silly to go for modular, aren't you? If that's all you're really looking for, actually, a monosynth with some CV outs and that, brilliant. because, you know, that's then the gateway, isn't it?
Sure.
But I think that's where I've got to, is that, yeah, I just want all the yummy, nice stuff that make unusual sounds and effects and, you know, and that type of stuff.
Lots of the modern synths, though, are so well integrated, like a Minibrute 2S.
Yeah.
With the non-keyboard version, you can have additional pitch sequences, additional LFOs, additional gate patterns. You can treat them as accents.
Yeah.
In a voice that sounds great, which is totally patchable, would totally integrate really easily with anything else.
And relatively affordable.
Yeah, really are, aren't they? How long did it take you with all the integration to find your voice with it, you know, get a system settled down, you know, you felt that you got the right things integrated and you thought, okay, right, here I am now, I can sort of find my voice with this now. How long did that sort of journey take, and what was the ultimate conclusion? What was the system that you sort of settled on that you thought, okay, well, I know we all change our systems, but okay, I think this is where I can really create my sound.
Well, it took a long time. And like you mentioned before, it's something that is always changing and is always in flux. But for the last 2 years or so, I've been using more or less the exact same system and have probably downsized my modular gear by about 50%. Certain things work great and certain things just aren't for you. Like, does it spark joy in you? There are certain modules that you just love. And certain modules you think you're going to love because there's a lot of hype around them. And every day we see new pieces coming out. And I think that there's this constant clamoring for the newest and coolest stuff. And I think that that's kind of a mistake. I think if you find pieces that you identify with and you can create some type of normalcy in your system and some type of something that you can come back to and work with easily, I think that is so important to creating modular music. Switching things out all the time may keep your brain active and you're constantly learning new things, and that's great. But in terms of creating music, I feel that some type of normalcy is really important. Being comfortable with the instrument, being able to really just work with it and get what you want out of it, as opposed to constantly learning it all the time.
It's almost like, you know, I used to think of like making samples and loops and getting things ready for a project. It's like asset building. I'm building my assets for a project. I'm not actually making music. And you can argue that maybe making drum loops is making music. Of course it is in many ways. But that wasn't the process in my mind. And it's still why I like, between mixing and mastering, often having a stem mix process. So going from multitracks in a DAW down to a handful of stems, just to really broadly look at this piece, is the mid kind of transients in the drums kind of pushing away from the front end of the notes on the melody, and I'd broad stroke kind of control the thing, as opposed to going, oh, it's track 7 in the drums, it's that second hi-hat layer that's going against. It's not really conducive to making good, quick changes. I like compartmentalizing my kind of mental processes.
Absolutely.
It's a very fortunate position, I realize, but I quite like the idea of there's a performance case and there's the kind of home case. And the home case, not necessarily the size of a bookshelf, it might just be a little 6U case or something, but it almost has to earn its place. Like, this is my instrument that I'm comfy with, but I am enjoying learning, turning over gear, swapping things out, trading it, trying a different sequencer, but it has to earn the right to go in my instrument. And I think it helps you make music. You can sit, nerd out, learn, try things, and then just switch off and be like, I've got this kind of old faithful in the corner there that is the instrument that's connected with you. And I think that it's a very fortunate position to be able to do it across two cases. But if at all possible, I think that's a really good way of doing that without just completely cutting off trying new things.
Sure.
I mean, of course, do. You know, people do, as you say, you downsize, you've really got the thing that speaks to you. In 3 years, that thing may need to change. So between them, there may be some turning over of gear again, but it has to come back to it working for you.
Sure.
And that takes time. You can't do that in your first year or so of modular, because there's so much. And there's so much learning of, as we said earlier, what is signal flow? What are all these things I just knew nothing about, even though I was maybe happy with the music I was making elsewhere? And it took me a long time to really feel comfortable.
And, you know, not that it should, but it should. You should give yourself the freedom to take as much time as you want. It's an evolving thing. And that's the allure of the modular world, is that I'm not investing in a single voiced instrument that is hardwired and this is it. I can constantly change, and there's infinite possibilities. So it's a lovely thing regarding the instrument. But after a while, you do realize what you like, what you use, and it depends on the application too. I do a lot of long form gigs that are 3 hours long, and I've got to use a drum machine and a little bit of modular to produce music that's going to be changing enough over time to fill 3 hours without sounding really boring. And it took me a long time to find the modules that are going to allow me the flexibility to do that. And like you said, my performance case is completely different than the case that I use for most of my sound design at home, because my performance case is usually patched for gigs. And then I've got a separate case at home that is more for experimentation and learning new things. So you're right. It is fortunate to have both. But if you have to narrow it down to one case, there's something to be said about sticking with the same gear for a while and really fleshing it out before you start inundating yourself with new modules to learn.
It just takes time.
Yeah.
But I like that. I don't think people are buying modular to solve a problem, nor should they. It's not like I need X. Yeah, I need X to finish Y kind of situation.
Not the right tool.
No, but to open yourself up to it, it's really kind of liberating. I think I'm looking at a Hordyke system. Not that I can get one quickly. It would be 2022 before I could get one if I go on the waiting list. Really considering it. Need to play with a friend's, borrow it for a few days. But man, I'm looking forward to being really naive again. Yeah. I'd do the same on Seat Lombard gear or something like that. I'm fortunate to have a good grounding in lots of other things. It's maybe a stepping stone, but I can't pretend I'd be experienced with them.
Sure. And that's exciting.
Yeah. Really yeah. exciting.
Yeah.
I think that's the dichotomy, though. You know, you can instantly put up this booming bass sound and you think, oh, man, that sounds so good. But then the problem is when you want to start stitching everything together, that's when the wheels fall off the cart a bit. It's like a bit of an alluring thing at first. And then you're scratching your head for quite a while, aren't you, after that, thinking, right, okay, I want to do this. How am I going to do that? It's a really weird one, isn't it? What I wanted to ask was, you've worked at Nerd Audio, and is it Chicago Musical Exchange in the past?
Mm-hmm.
So how has that flavored your, A, buying of gear, B, the journey into modular, and your musical journey as well? Has it flavored it in any way?
Yeah, I would say a lot. And that's a great follow-up question to what we were just talking about, because watching people get into this gear, working in those shops, managing those shops, and working with first-timers in this, it was an everyday occurrence. And usually people are coming from some type of musical background, whether they play guitar, bass, drums, or other instruments. Ironically enough, we were just talking about trumpet. I had a lot of trumpet players coming in.
Chicago trumpet players that want to learn modular.
Well, a lot of people wanted to run their other instruments through a modular system, which I thought, hey, that's brilliant. Mm. You know, create your own custom effects box.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to get into all of the ins and outs of synthesis. If you're really just using it for a specific purpose, you can buy a few modules that are really unique and have a cool voice, which I thought was a great way to use modular. So any instrumentalists out there, guitarists, if you're looking for effects that you could never get out of pedals, holy shit. You know, you can spend the same amount and put together a solid modular system and have something super unique. Sorry, but back to your question.
You were just back in the shop then, wasn't you? You were selling me on a...
You were just unlocking the door, 9 a.m. Monday morning.
Yeah, I was there, wasn't I? Getting me folding out, thinking, oh yeah, I'll have one of those cases then. It might make my guitar sound great.
And I don't mean to sound like a salesman at all.
No, because it's quite right.
One of the reasons I think I fell into the role of the job so easily, not because I'm necessarily a great salesman, it's just because I really love the instruments. And I have spent a lot of time, you know, bashing my head against the wall. So if I can supply any type of information or guidance to somebody else looking to jump in, then, you know, please use me as a resource.
Did you find that working in these shops as well informed what you did? I mean, was it a nice platform just to be able to sort of test a lot of gear out? Was that a nice sort of luxury to have?
100%. being able to have your hands on every new piece of gear the day it hits the shop, having time to learn it, explain it, go through it, take it home if I needed to, film videos with it. Just an invaluable thing. And honestly, that was the hardest part to leave of the job.
I can imagine.
So I had great customers. I had great clientele, and I had a lot of regular people, which was so nice to work with a consistent group and to watch them, you know, slowly dive in and then turn themselves into some massively prolific modular artist. It's just so awesome to watch people take the ball and really run with it. But yes, having access to all the gear, it just honestly, more than anything, solidified the choices that I had already made in my own gear. If there were things that came around that I thought could be a better tool for a certain application, then I might consider switching them out or adding a new tool to the arsenal. But really, it made me look at my system and think, wow,
I'm there sort of thing.
I don't need all this stuff. I'm learning so much about the insides of all these instruments that I realized I hadn't learned the insides of everything I already had. And once I started putting that time in even more, like, holy cow, I don't need everything in the world to achieve it, because I've learned enough about how to use the gear to take advantage of what's already in my studio.
What are some of the modules that you found connected with you pretty much straight away? And, you know, they're just ones that you love.
The Rene, first of all, is probably my favorite module. I have versions 1 and 2 in the rack at the same time, sometimes in the same rack, just because I love them both equally. It's probably what catapulted my interest into sequencing and thinking a little bit more abstractly about sequencing.
Yeah.
So I will say Rene first and foremost, because I love touching things and I love the interaction that I can get from the sequencer.
Yeah.
From there, I mean, I will say that I am a bit of a Make Noise fanboy and a bit of a Moog fanboy at the same time. I just connect with those instruments in a certain way. I love the way that they work with modulation. I love the way they sound. I also love the principles that both companies have in terms of their production and the way they take care of their employees. So that's kind of important to me as well.
Yeah.
Mutable. Gotta love Mutable. But I honestly don't own much Mutable. I own a Platts now. I've gone from pretty much a full Mutable row to honestly just hearing those sounds so much that when I hear a Rings, like, oh, I mean, it sounds beautiful, but it's like Rings patch, bro.
But it's the surface level, I've done nothing with it, Rings.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that's not Emily's fault.
No, not at all. No, it's a beautifully deep mod. You can get so much out of it. But I found myself kind of using it at surface level, so I thought I would switch it up with something else.
Yeah, of course.
My Mother 32, to be honest, I bought it when it first came out, and I was still relatively new to modular, and I remember being very excited for this module. But man, I rely on that thing to have a full Moog voice in a small space is pretty incredible at a really decent price point. I love that. I've got multiple maths. I've got, honestly, the modules I love the most are probably my utilities. I think the deeper you dive into modular, the more the utilities start leaning on the sexier side of things. And we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
And the modules you've been releasing have been a testament to that, where, like, I need these things, you know, to have multiple channels of mutes or sample and hold in a 1/4 HP module. That is way more exciting to me than the newest oscillator coming out or the through zero, whatever. I want utilities and things that allow me to switch up the workflow of the sound sources I already have, because they're already diverse, you know, between the few oscillators I have, the Mother 32 and a bunch of the other synths. I've got plenty of digital and analog voices. It's really, how am I going to use them? How do I want them to integrate together, and how do I want my sequencers to control them? So switches, filters, VCAs, mixers, all that stuff, way sexier to me than any of the, you know, quote, sexy stuff.
I think we've talked about this, Ben, a lot, haven't we, over the past, that actually the big plus point for modular is the utilities, and that's what actually can create the more unusual sounds that you can coax out of modular. Without those utilities, you're pretty stuffed, and you seem to be the king of working that out at the moment, Ben, with your couple of releases.
It's just, we earlier spoke of Rob Hardike and his system, and I remember very distinctly one of the first things he said to me when I met him was modular is about modulation. And I was like, you know, he's right. He's totally right. It is about the utility thing. And
that is, like Ben said, modular is about modulation. I mean, it's 100% true. If I can't control it, if I can't modulate it, then what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
That's why I'm buying it in the first place. You know, and not to name any names, but there are certain drum modules that sound great, but I have no modulation for. And it's like, well, why am I paying for this over a sample when I have nothing I can really do differently with it? You know, other than it sits in a modular format. But back to the shop and having gear at your disposal and learning that and bringing up utilities, one of the last pieces of gear I brought into Chicago Music Exchange before I left was a full surge system. All utilities. There's one oscillator, a bunch of slope generators, and, you know, a few things. And I mean, what a mind fuck. I mean, there's no manual for any of it, and there's almost no documentation of how to use it because I looked everywhere. It really took me sitting down for hours and hours at a time and trial and error, like, okay, I know what this does in theory, but the jacks have different colors and there's not necessarily a specific pattern to how that's working. And you really had to take it at face value and try to figure out how to use each utility to be a musical component of the system. Yeah. And I'm never going to say that I mastered it, but after a long time, I ended up getting some really cool stuff at it, but just took a long time and a lot of effort and thinking very much outside of the box, especially coming from a Eurorack background where things are labeled, everything has a manual, and it's pretty black and white, to something that is very open to interpretation and very avant-garde. And holy shit, I learned more about synthesis working with that surge system for 2 weeks than I have in Eurorack in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think learning and using the original dual universal slope generators, which is what MAFS is based on, and Rampage, and any other kind of function generator, really, that's where that comes from. Learning that on a surge system was probably the best thing I've done for my synthesis abilities, if you like, or technical proficiency. Things like it's linear and it will rise and fall. So once you get into that mindset of, well, then an envelope rises and falls, so does an LFO, but it's periodic. If it's faster, that's what an oscillator is. That's also what a slew's doing. And if it's a slew, it's also a filter. And all these kind of things come on and you think, oh, but it's got end of output. So if I add a bit of time to it, that's then a gate delay. Yep. All these things start to kind of come out of it. And I was like, yeah, but that curve control on MAFS is cool. And on Rampage and other function generators. I was like, I wonder how you do that. It's like, well, if I feed the output back into influence itself, the shapes are going to pull on themselves and like kind of cave in exponentially. And you're like, all right, that's what that's doing. And I don't know the circuit level kind of engineering that well. It's like, I bet that's what the circuit's doing. I bet those curve controls are a feedback system that are just kind of pulling them down on themselves. It certainly works.
It's baking from scratch. I mean, it really is. Yeah. It is like the bare bones of synthesis. And here you go. Here's some flour and some eggs. Make some good shit.
Something I wanted to ask about, and I got seriously excited when I seen it, I think it was over 18 months ago now, and that was Patch CV. I know you've had an involvement in that. And I'm super excited because I'm a person that loves documentaries on very niche things. So when I seen Patch CV come around, I was like, wow. But would you like to let us know where that is at the moment and what your involvement in that was?
Yeah. So to anybody listening who doesn't know what Patch CV was, it was a documentary focused on the community side of the modular movement. The music they're creating, the togetherness and unification that kind of came through the mutual love of a bizarre instrument like a modular synth. And yes, we did release a few episodes, and there has been some trailer content as well as three separate vinyl releases featuring modular artists from
the series. At first, we wanted to release it episodically. And we kind of went back and forth on this, whether to release all of the content at once as one solid feature film or to release it episodically and kind of morph the direction of the series based on everybody's reaction and the fan base and everything like that. So yeah. We have a full feature film ready to go, which was supposed to be released a few months ago at a film festival in Asheville, North Carolina, home of Moog and Make Noise, which was going to be very exciting and fun. Unfortunately, due to COVID, that has been pushed back a little bit. So, but for anybody that has been following the series, if you have seen the first three episodes, there is a full-length feature film. It'll be about an hour and a half that will be coming out sometime this year. You will be able to purchase it via download or physical copy. It was a fantastic project. And when it does come out, I think everybody's absolutely going to love it. Some beautiful music, wonderful artists, everybody from, you know, Richard Devine to Herb Deutsch, Todd Barton. I mean, yeah, getting to hang with Todd Barton. I got to meet him, interview him, hang and watch him play all in the same day. And it was my first Todd experience. What a lovely human. What an amazing man.
He's literally were just going to be my exact words to put in. What a lovely human, lovely person Todd Barton is.
That is who I hope to be when I'm Todd Barton's age. I just want to be cool and down to earth and just love my instrument and just be thankful for the universe I live in. And that's the vibe I get from Todd Barton.
Yeah, it's a great guy.
God bless him.
Yeah. We love you, Todd.
We love you, Todd. If you're listening, buddy, cheers to you. Soda water, cheers, Steve.
Soda water, cheers.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds absolutely... I mean, my mouth's watering for it. I love stuff like this. Can't wait to see it. I mean, my only worry about this is you've got an hour and a half. I just want to watch, like, 10 of them. You know, I want to watch 10 of those 1.5 hours. I mean, do you think there'll be any more after this? Because I just think it's such a special movement that's happening. I think for history, it should be well documented. It's a very expressive and creative art form. And I think people are going to look back in history, what we're in at the moment, and think, wow, wouldn't it have been amazing to live in those times? You know, as we look back on musical genres and you think, oh, wow, wouldn't it have been amazing to, you know, be at the start of hip hop and be a graph artist and be at the beginning of all that and the scene and all that type of stuff. I think people are going to look back at this modular scene now in sort of 10, 20, 30 years time and think that. And I'm just hoping that there's enough documented evidence and documented stories about what's going on, which I think severely lacks in a lot of music genres. I mean, you do get that documentation, like, you know, looking back at jazz and, as I say, looking back in hip-hop, and, you know, I know Hip Hop Evolution is, you know, a great show on hip-hop and that, but if you haven't got that original footage and, you know, with all the players that's going on, it's hard to start piecing it all together really well, isn't it? So do you think that after this there'll be any more, and if not, can you tell people to do more?
Well, I'm hoping that there's more. The original idea behind this was to go international and to travel to Japan and to India and to Europe and to all of these places, even South Africa, where these little small modular scenes are blowing up and they're becoming massive. I just participated in an online electronic music festival in India that was pretty much all hardware artists. And it was streaming every day for about a month and a half. And they're just dying to have more modular, more synthesis, more. I mean, this is growing. This community is really finding a foothold all over the world. It'd be fantastic to move beyond the States and what we've done already, which we've kind of captured the gist of what's going on. I think that there, when we look at the social and political climates of the places where this art form is popping up, there's a lot more interesting things happening. It's not just, oh, these are fun, quirky instruments. It's, how is this affecting your culture? Where did you learn this from? How does this affect your communities, really? So I think that there is a lot of great content potentially out there, and I would love to see it go international and dive a little bit deeper into the human side of things and why people are drawn to these instruments and why they feel that they're kind of a source of creative freedom. And hopefully once the feature film launches and if we get a little bit of traction, maybe we can come back and finally finalize those plans to travel internationally and see all of this change. But we'll see.
So no, that's just absolutely brilliant thing. I can't wait for that. But yeah, I know that at the moment you've gone through quite a lot of change and you're doing a lot of different things at the moment musically and I think with Patreon. Could you just walk us through a few of those at the moment?
Yeah. So right before COVID hit, I left my full-time gig selling synthesizers and decided that I'd rather just focus on playing them. It's what I like to do more than anything. And after a lot of suggestion and push from my customer base on creating a Patreon, I decided, you know, let's just clear the schedule and let's start focusing on the work that really matters to me. And that is synthesizer education and sound design and just creative efforts in music in general. So I've been releasing my own music, launched my Patreon, which is largely educational based, tutorial based, but also interactive and fun, as well as releasing more of my own music and doing sound design, building sound banks for various companies and trying to supplement my income using my studio as much as I possibly can.
That sounds a wonderful endeavor. What sort of levels have you got on your Patreon? Because, I mean, you come over as a person that could teach very well, and probably from your store background, you've had to do a lot of that of, you know, nursing people through things. So what sort of direct educational stuff have you got on there, and what are you looking to do for the future?
Essentially, there's two tiers to the Patreon. One is a $5 tier, which allows you access to the videos that I post every week or bi-weekly or however I'm often able to actually create content and release it. That is a lot more time consuming than I thought it was going to be. So I'm learning as well. So there's a $5 tier, which gets you into the, I believe I called it Hardwired, little modular reference. And then there's a $10 tier, which I call Flux Capacitor, which is another just nerdy reference. You get everything from the Hardwired tier, as well as a 25-minute one-on-one with me once a month and access to sample banks that I create, things like that. I will be posting and creating more of that content and making that available to people in that tier as things go on. I recently lost my mixer and main interface, so I've been rearranging my workflow for video production and stuff like that. So I'm a little behind, but catching up. First video was integrating your Digitag with your modular system, because that's something I get. Most of my questions are about the integration of those two instruments or just Electron hardware pieces in general with Eurorack. I have, you know, piece of gear A, how do I connect it with modular system B? And a lot of that experience and everything comes from being in the shops and, you know, over the years, putting together a pretty broad base of knowledge around all of this gear puts me in a pretty good position to explain things to people and guide them through, get the hard part done, get them into a space where they can be creative musically and understand their gear. I may not be the most technical person in the world, but I can explain things in a layman's sense that seems to work well with people. I explain them like I would want them to be explained to me.
I sort of got this thing that I like to have it very basic, get it done, matter of fact, so I can just do it and then go into the nuts and bolts after that, the deep dive. I hate the deep dive first. I'm like, let me at it.
It's too much sometimes for people. You know, they just, if you can get a sound out of a piece, if they can turn a knob and feel that cut off and you watch that smile spread across their face, you've already connected. And then it's baby steps from there.
Yeah. I know you're working on a very important compilation album at the moment with other people, aren't you? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
All right. Yeah. So a good friend of mine, Martin Miners, reached out to me. He's a fantastic film composer and just all around great musician with interest in putting together a compilation of modular and synth-specific artists in an effort to raise funds for the NAACP. In light of everything that's been happening in the States and worldwide, we've seen protests everywhere.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the best time to put your efforts in, whatever they may be. I know a lot of musicians, myself included, are not in a position to contribute financially maybe at this time, but if I can contribute music and help raise money for these causes and contribute in any way I can, I feel that's very important. So we have a massively diverse list of artists from all over the country, and we will be releasing this compilation on June 19th. It will be available on Bandcamp and other sources. All proceeds will be going to the NAACP and a variety of other charities directly linked with Black Lives Matter. So if you are interested in supporting these causes and getting behind some great music as well, and maybe discovering some artists you haven't heard of before, this is a wonderful opportunity to bring all of that in.
Go bookmark that and go and buy it when it's out, because as you say, maybe you can't contribute in, you know, in a monetary term. But if you can contribute in a creative term and then through that have money flow to this cause, which, as you say, is, you know, we need to put all our efforts in at the moment because it's a rolling ball. We don't want that to stop, really, do we?
The momentum is moving. And I mean, in my lifetime, I've never seen so much push for change on a social level. So we got to keep it up. And like you said, keep the ball rolling in whatever way we can.
We'll make sure that that's linked in the show notes as well. So you'll be able to grab that directly from the podcast.
Yeah, well, I think that's a nice place to round it up, Ben. It's come to a sort of nice natural conclusion. Yeah, thanks very much for coming on, Corey. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Time's all mine.
Time's just zipped by.
It has.
Could have kept rattling on for ages.
Oh, my goodness.
We do have to try and end it somewhere. But yeah, thanks a lot for coming on, and I wish you all the best with your new venture.
Thank you so much.
Well, at this point, I'd like to give some shout out to our Seattle connections. We've got Kyle and Robert's Source of Uncertainty Buchla podcast. There's also our friend Tim Held and Podular Modcast, Waveform Magazine with Ellison, which has moved into its new paid subscription model. I'm excited to see what kind of different revenue system wrapped around that leads to and where the magazine goes. We've got the good people of Patchworks, kind of holding down the Seattle scene out there. And of course, Modular Seattle and Modular on the Spot Seattle with Brad and Josh too. I've been keeping my isolation streaming resource going at bit.ly/coronastreams. Streaming's definitely slowed down. That panic of, oh God, we're all at home, we've all just got to stream and connect with each other, has definitely died down, thank God, because it was hard to keep up with. myself and my own schedule. But it's definitely still going. There's still people out there doing good streams. So that list is still going. And the link is in the show notes for that too.
And we release our show every month. So remember to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you find yourself over there, you've enjoyed the show, then please give us a thumbs up or a review. It does go a long way. If you'd like to listen to the podcast with the detailed show notes, then please head over to www.esotericmodulation.com.
You can also look us up on Instagram and Facebook, where you can keep up to date with what's happening, and they're good places to pop a few questions at us too.
Well, that about rounds it up. Corey, once again, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. You both are awesome. My pleasure.
Great. Well, speak to you both soon.
Take it easy. See ya.
Bye.